Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast as it's happening right now live on the intertubes.
Yeah.
So we've got a great show for you today. We have automotive technology experts, Michigan Council of Women in Technology and Diva Tech Talks, Kathleen Norton-Shocks coming up a little bit later, Justin Coffey from Red Level, the Microsoft Solutions Manager, and he's going to be talking about mobile workforces. That's a huge topic today.
Huge.
And at the end of the show, my boss, Bruce Annette from Lawrence Technological University.
A double ring.
That is our shameless plug bell. That's right. That's
no pressure.
That's
no
what we plug
pressure,
one of those.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. So, we'll be talking. Yes. And also today on the board, we have a treat. We have Dave Phillips, the creator, the co-creator of this entire operation here, Podcast
AKA
Detroit.
The Godfather.
Ah, okay.
I'm trying to trademark Podfather.
Podfather. Ooh, I like that. Yeah, I like that.
All right.
So, we've got the Jessica cam installed, so you're going to be looking at Dave instead today.
Okay, but we're going to kick the show off with a genuine automotive expert, legend, a scholar, gentleman, well-known street fighter, I could go on and on.
Bon vivant,
yes.
Man about town.
It's David Cole from Auto Harvest these days. And David, you have a number of topics that you want to cover that will, that are top in the news regarding automotive technology. So I guess I just open it up to you and ask you what's new.
Well, I think every day there's something new in this business. And as an old guy, I've seen this for the past 50, 60, 70 years. There's no static, no status quo. Everything's changing. And I think we're at the height of the rate of change right now. But we're looking at things that range from the policies that will continue to unfold from the Trump administration. We see lots of issues related to talent. This industry is very short of talent, and it's going to get a lot worse as the boomers retire. For example, at the Original Equipment Suppliers Association, they have about 500 members. The number one issue that suppliers are facing is future talent, and it just runs across the board. And, of course, one of the issues with the retirement of the boomers is that we're losing a lot of knowledge. And one of the questions is, how do we retain some of that knowledge? How do we, in a sense, make the key ideas of some key people available to people across the company? We see uncertainty on powertrain, autonomous vehicles. For example, it was a very revealing study here in the last week or so about who's ahead in autonomous vehicles. And if you kind of listen to the media, you think it must be Apple, Tesla. As it turned out, Ford and GM were number one and two in terms of what they're doing with respect to autonomous vehicles. So there's a lot going on, and it's not going to stop.
Speaking of autonomous vehicles, there was an announcement this morning that Lyft and Google's, I forget, Alphabet or whatever it's called, are working together against Uber. Did you get that one?
That's right. Well, it doesn't make any difference what you're talking about in this industry. You're always going to have competition. In fact, competition is a good thing because it really stimulates, I think, more aggressive policies with respect to the development of the technology. And that's big news. It's also interesting that GM is one of the Lyft significant owners.
Yes.
We don't hear that very much, but the mergers, relationships, connections that run across this industry and through the tech industry, and this is true globally, for example, with Intel buying for $15 billion Mobileye, which is an Israeli-based company that's one of the leaders in terms of developing technology related to autonomous vehicles.
Yes.
So it's a fun time.
I've read a lot over the past few years about how millennials may not be as into the whole car ownership thing as prior generations, that they, kind of tend to want to just have a car when they want to have a car. So it's a you can't stream a car.
Well, it's because they live in the cities, and then you got to pay $200 or $300 a month to park them and all that other jazz.
But I did see last.
That's right.
I did see last week a study that said that may be a little bit overstated. That as they age, the millennials are starting to settle into more conventional car buying habits.
I think that's true. Millennials, when they're just getting started, generally have significant debt from college and so on, and they want to live in the inner city, but ultimately they connect, get married, have kids, and then the tendency is to move to the suburbs. So that story is not, I think, fully written yet in terms of the millennials and car ownership.
All right, and you wanted to talk about the views of the Trump administration on NAFTA. I know he campaigned on pulling us out of NAFTA. It's a horrible deal, that kind of thing, and that seems to have softened somewhat now,
yeah.
Hasn't it?
I think so, and of course, one of the big reasons for that is the people that Trump has pulled around them that are pretty significant people in the auto industry, like Mary Barra and Mark Fields, Sergio Marchionne. And I think generally when you're not familiar with the topic, you tend to take polarizing positions. When you get more familiar with the topic, and I think this has certainly happened with President Trump, he begins to be a little bit more careful in terms of what he is going to do. But, it's not just NAFTA. It's the whole game from immigration, for example. The big push is to bring manufacturing back here. And if we don't have the talent, one of the things that's going to do is increase the incentive to try to find talented people other places in the world and bring them here to do the jobs that are so important. And I would emphasize one thing, and we've talked about this before, and that is the high economic multiplier in auto. For an automotive manufacturer, that multiplier today is about 10, which means that for every job at a GM, Ford, Toyota, whoever is at the OEM level, there are 9 other jobs in the economy, either at suppliers or spinoff jobs, such as supermarkets and restaurants and so on. So manufacturing is a big deal. It's a really big deal here in the Midwest and a super big deal here in Michigan. And so we've got to be very careful with policy that we, in a sense, do something that would seriously impede this as a factor in our economy.
Well, and then there's a big push on H-1Bs. There's some people think they should be cut back. Other people think they should be changed. I mean, the original intent was to bring in very skilled people that we didn't have here.
That's
in the
right.
States. And then it's sort of morphed into this contest, who can fill them out the fastest and get their people here that who may or may not have the skills, and in some cases are replacing Americans. So, yeah, certainly changes need to be made, but that could be one way to solve the problem if we fix that, right?
It could be. Maybe you do a little better screening. What most people are not aware of is that if you have an H-1B visa for somebody to come here from India or wherever, it's not cheap. It's $500,000.
Wow.
And in a sense, that's income to our economy if we allow somebody to come in with these unique skills. The other side of it is those techies are going to contribute enormously in the kind of a fast-paced, technology-changing world that we're in right now. So we need them. I should also make the comment that we're not unique in terms of the talent shortage. The problems are actually worse in other countries. Serious problem in Germany. It's an out-of-sight problem in Japan, where they have very low birth rate, limited immigration. And, for example, they really have not taken the advantage of the skills of women in many of their professional disciplines. And Japan right now is in a population decline period. So this is it's a big global issue, and it's not going to go away.
David, what is your prescription for the talent shortage? What should we be doing, in your view, from a public policy standpoint?
Well, it's a combination of things. And number one, in fact, we've created an activity called Building America's Tomorrow. You can go to buildingamericastomorrow.com, and you can see a short video. And that's really aimed at getting K-12 kids thinking about careers related to manufacturing and getting an education. Another thing that we're looking at is called the Experience Connection, where you take retirees cities and various databases, tech societies, colleges, universities, see if they're interested in some follow-on work, short-term assignments, coaching, mentoring, and so on. Another is making sure you retain knowledge in the company. When somebody leaves, they leave with maybe some old technology, but they leave also with wisdom that you would like to retain. Mm. And so the whole idea of trying to develop a database of knowledge and wisdom from older senior people in the company, retirees, it takes a full court press. We can't just rely on one or two mechanisms if we're going to sustain manufacturing of what it is today and what it can be tomorrow. We're going to have to do a lot of things that we have not been doing very well. For example, the people in the industry talk about the talent shortage a great deal, but we don't communicate effectively outside of the industry. And so most people, for example, parents, teachers, administrators, even kids have a very dated picture of what modern manufacturing is, what it's like, how important it is. And so we've got to communicate much more effectively the challenges that we're facing and the incentives of making sure manufacturing is still and will remain into the future a big deal here in America.
And Tesla, you have on your list, Tesla versus the rest of the industry. What is Elon Musk up to these days?
Well, who knows? I mean, he seems to have a project a week.
Going to Mars, last I heard. I don't know.
Spacecraft, solar cells. It was kind of interesting in this study because the perception, I think, across the population was that in terms of autonomous technology, that Tesla was kind of the leader. And in the study, actually, Ford and GM were number one and two, and Tesla was down in the lower part. So sometimes you hear the old story of big smoke, no fire, and I think that perhaps is the case in terms of Tesla, at least with autonomous vehicles. I think they've done a nice job with their vehicles. I'm not denigrating the work that they've done, but they're playing in the big leagues now, and it is not going to be easy, particularly as they move their product down into the higher volume segments.
Okay, we got about 2 minutes left. Got a couple things on here about, let's see, what have we got?
Powertrains.
Powertrains,
what's
yes.
next? Yes.
Well, that is a good question. If I knew that answer, I would go to my broker right now and order some stock.
When David talks, but everyone listens. Remember the old E.F. Hutton thing?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Right. But I think the key issue in terms of future powertrains is probably the battery. We kind of know what we can do with engines and a variety of fuels, and there's some outstanding technology that's coming forward there. But if we can get a battery that is safe, maybe a solid-state type lithium battery that would cost less than about $100 a kilowatt hour and could accept fairly rapid charging. I mean, you hate to, you know, I'm out of juice. I have to go now sit for a couple of hours at a charging station. That just doesn't work. But if that battery in a couple of key areas can be improved, we could really see a change quite rapidly in terms of future powertrains. That doesn't necessarily mean elimination of engines. In fact, right now across the world, the plug-in hybrid seems to be gaining momentum. But if we make that upper step in batteries, things could get very, very interesting very quickly.
All right. Thank you very much, David Cole. Great stuff as always. David Cole, Chair of Auto Harvest.
Yeah.
And Center for Auto Research Chair Emeritus and Chair of Building America's Tomorrow. That website, once again, buildingamericastomorrow.com. Thank you very much, sir. And for right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we'll be right back with more of the M2 TechCast.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay. Welcome back. It's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M Squared TechCast. We have with us, though, on the line for sure, because I hear her laughter, Kathleen Norton-Schock. So, Kathleen, you were going to give us an update on both the Michigan Council on Women and Technology and your podcast, Diva Tech Talk. So go ahead and get that going, and we might have to extend that a little bit. We'll see.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Matt. I will. So we have three main things I just wanted to talk about very quickly. Coming up this week on May 17th, along with Grand Circus, and I'm sure you're all familiar with Grand Circus, the tremendous nonprofit in downtown Detroit that helps people get programming background and programming training. We're sponsoring on the 17th. A panel on strategizing your job search, and this is very specifically aimed at women. And all four panelists are women, with accomplished women with strong careers. And the person representing MCWT is also on our advisory board. Her name is Amy Luke, and she works at GM. And I really do suggest that if anybody would like to, is in the process of job hunting or thinking about one, that you go online to the Grand Circus website, which is grandcircus.co, and you can register. This is a free event, again, primarily oriented toward women, starting at 5:30 on the 17th, and it will be at 1570 Woodward Avenue, which is where Grand Circus is headquartered. And then secondly, on the 31st of May, MCWT's Executive Connections Summit is taking place at the Suburban Collection in Novi. And this is an annual event. It's what I think of as one of our great intellectual capital events. We will have Mark Fields, who is the CEO of Forward, of course, as one of our main speakers. We will have, as our keynote inspirational speaker, a Paralympic athlete. A woman Paralympic athlete, a whole series of various panels, all of whom are technology experts and technology leaders. And it's, I really do suggest that anybody who'd like to go to that, think about registering. Registration will close within the next week, but it does take place on May 31st at the Suburban Collection. And you can get tickets by going to our website, which is www.mcwt.org. And then finally, you guys are still there, I hope.
Oh, yes, we're here.
We're just listening.
Yeah, good, good. It sounds so quiet. Finally, on July 24th, our big fundraiser of the summer takes place, and that is the biggest golf event of the summer, which is the Michigan Council of Women in Technology annual golf outing. It's going to be in Lake Orion at the Indian Wood Golf Course. We have most of the sponsorships are going rather rapidly, but if you would like to be where the movers and shakers and IT are and also have a lovely day out, I suggest, again, getting to the MCWT website, which is www.mcwt.org. Our sponsorship packages are there, and registration has already opened for anybody who wants to be an individual golfer. So that's it for my Michigan Council of Women in Technology news.
Just curious, now, really Kathleen. Kathleen, just curious, how much room do you have for golfers at this event? How many spots are available?
250 golfers.
Okay.
And there's going to be a lot of interesting, different kinds of attractions this year. We're having a helicopter. We're having this is kind of a surprise, but I can give you a little bit of the details of it. There's going to be a ball drop from a helicopter. We start out at 8 o'clock in the morning. It's going to be an amazing and really, really fun, fun event. So I'm looking forward to it. As I hope everybody else will be, too.
A lot of cool prizes, that kind of thing. Always. Yep.
Pardon?
A lot of cool prizes.
Yeah. Yep, lots of sponsorships of various holes. There's a Bloody Mary bar that opens at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Day drinking, yay.
You know, it's okay. Shotgun start.
Good until about 1 in the afternoon. Then.
Yeah, and then the headache starts. Yep. Right, yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Right. And go straight to lunch and dinner.
Right,
and
right.
Again, it's one of our prime fundraisers. And as you all know, MCWT does wonderful work. You know, we've given away over $1 million worth of scholarships over the last decade. We do robotics grants. We do summer camps for girls. We do great after-school programs for girls. We're going to be doing a whole series of things for mid-career women, some of which I've already started. So I really strongly suggest that if you want to support our good work, you think about coming to the event on the 24th of July. Now, do we have Susan Emmerich on the line, gentlemen?
I am here.
Oh,
you are here.
Okay, great.
Good.
Wonderful.
Okay, great. So then let's go quickly into the Diva Tech Talk stuff. Tomorrow, Diva Tech Talk, which, of course, is the podcast of girls and women in technology, but accomplished women in technology. We podcast all the time to inspire women and girls to join the field. We'll be doing the in honor of what I would call Mother's Week. We have a mother-daughter a pair being podcasted, and we'll be releasing that tomorrow. And that's Amy O'Connor, who is a big data evangelist at Cloudera, and her daughter, Danielle Dean, who is the lead data scientist for big data at Microsoft. So that's exciting. And anybody who wants to be listening to that podcast as quickly as we put it up can go to www.divatechtalk.com. But last week, we had a tremendous podcast, and we have our guests on the phone right now. Susan Emmerich, who is a global marketing executive with IBM, who is an instructor as well. I don't know how you fit this all in, Susan, an instructor at Carnegie Mellon and also Western Virginia University. And the thing we wanted to talk about is, besides those other two big things in her life, she is also the author of a tremendous book that I've been able to read over the last week, called The Most Powerful Brand on Earth. So welcome, Susan. And by the way, if anybody wants Susan's personal story, you can go to divatechtalk.com and listen to her podcast. But I'd like to get quickly into the book, if you wouldn't mind, Susan. Maybe you can help us understand what inspired you to write it and who's your targeted audience for The Most Powerful Brand on Earth.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me. I was inspired to write the book as a way to give back and help other marketing communications practitioners and really even business leaders that are investing in digital and social media to build their brand. And there's so much involved with building a successful advocacy or even influencer engagement program that's now possible because of social networking. So from business processes to governance models to social listening as a foundation to instrumentation and measurement frameworks and even the software and infrastructure that's required. So I wanted to create a business reference that would provide a roadmap for empowering a social workforce and to drive thought leadership and drive engagement with customers, which is all now possible through social networking.
That's fantastic. So I know you're the co-author of this book, along with Chris Boudreau, but why were you uniquely qualified to co-author this book?
Well, it's based directly on the work that I've done and led and proven methods that I've actually implemented, both at IBM as well as with other clients. So I've been, in a way, a pioneer who's navigated, you know, the various objections, negotiated support and investment, managed through the risks. And it's truly a firsthand account of how to build and implement a successful employee advocacy program that could then also be extended to partners as well as clients.
So this can be useful for any number of companies, both those who are themselves vendors like IBM and those who are not vendors but who are engaging in social media listening, et cetera. Tell us a little bit, what are the top five or six most vital topics that the book covers and why are those important to today's business professionals?
Sure. Well, readers will benefit from the frameworks that we include in the book. So establishing a data-driven foundation for a social listening practice, for example, both real-time as well as evaluating progress and trends over time is certainly something that we cover. We also provide frameworks for measuring success and how to recruit, onboard, train, and equip subject matter experts at your company to successfully build their presence and share their expertise to benefit your brand and really your company at large, as well as guidelines. So there's a lot that needs to be thought through in terms of brand engagement guidelines when you think about having employees or partners have a voice publicly and having kind of giving them the rules of the road for social media guidelines and even compliance guidelines that are critical for them to make sure that they know the guardrails. In addition, we include case studies from various companies and contributors who have also put together successful advocacy programs for their companies, not just in technology companies, although we do cover quite a few of those, but also other kinds of companies. And then we describe program strategy and design and how to harness the power of empowering employees and really extending that to resellers and partners that can then be translated into building trust and advocacy in social media for your brand. So in the end, it's really an essential read for anyone interested in generating greater awareness and revenues while decreasing the cost of marketing and selling and customer service, because it's able to be done through social media and driving engagement one-on-one with customers.
Considering that both Mike and Matt have been around a while, as have I, guys, you'd be very interested to hear that one of the advocates of this book is a gentleman we all know quite well, Scott Monty, who used to head social media at Ford. And also, I'm sure some of our listeners have heard of David Meerman Scott, who in my mind is a pioneer in this whole area of marketing strategy and particularly electronic marketing strategy. Well, both of them are big fans of Susan's and of the book. So, Susan, I it's a great book. I mean, I spent, because it's a business book, I can only spend a little time every night, but I managed to make it through in just a few nights of reading it by the bedside. And, I know that there are tips in there that are actionable for me and for people that I'm working with right now. And of course, my little company, Arden Cause, is quite small, right? But so it's interesting to me that people who at places like Ford and IBM and then places as small as Arden Cause can still use much of what you talk about here. Where can the audience obtain the book? Go ahead.
Yeah, it really is meant for any size business, because that's one of the beauties of social networking and the direct engagement that it allows you to have. The book is available on Amazon, and it's also available at Barnes & Noble. So you can either order it online. It's available in print as well as MP3.
Very nice. And if anybody wanted to contact you, do you mind giving our audience your contact information?
Sure. You can reach out to me on Twitter at SFEmrick. You can reach me on my Gmail account, emricksf@gmail.com, or you can reach me through my website, which is susanemrick.com.
All right. Thanks very much. Thanks very much, Kathleen Norton-Schock. We're going to have to leave it there for right now. Kathleen Norton-Schock from Ardent Cause, Diva Tech Talk, and the Michigan Council of Women in Technology. Susan Emrick, who is leader of IBM Power Systems Product Portfolio Marketing Strategy and co-author of The Most Powerful Brand on Earth. Thank you both very much for being here today.
Okay, thanks, gentlemen. Bye-bye now.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we'll be right back with more of the M-Squared TechCast. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with more of the M Squared TechCast. Right now, we're going to talk Lawrence Technological University.
Double there.
Okay. All right. That's our shameless plug bell, but it's worth plugging because it's a great institution. And my boss, Bruce Annette Jr., the Vice President of Marketing and Public Affairs, is here today. Welcome, Bruce.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, well, I'm pretty good. We have a number of things to talk about when it comes to Lawrence Tech, where you know, technology or technological is our middle name. So we certainly belong
indeed
on this
it
show.
Is. Yes, that's a good point. Yeah.
So first of all, we had a groundbreaking last Thursday for our fourth residence hall. Why don't you talk about that new building project that's going to be going up on our campus over the next year or so.
Sure, Matt. You know, Lawrence Tech in recent years has been evolving from a purely commuter campus to a more residential. And this new housing center that we're going to begin construction on here shortly, that we broke ground on, will give us a capacity to have over 1,000 students living on campus. And that's in addition to those who are living nearby. So it changes the whole scope of the university. We are having larger activities for our students who are residing on the campus, mm-hmm. and we're adding more sports. Some of you may have heard that football will be coming to Lawrence Tech in the fall of 2018 after a brief 70-year hiatus.
What? I'm just curious, what level of football will that be?
That's NAIA football.
NAIA, okay.
Yeah, and that's it's like one of the smaller NCAA divisions, but there are other schools in Michigan competing at that level.
So that would be a good – who would be on your schedule typically?
Well, schools of our size, we're not going to be playing the big public universities, but the smaller private schools uh-huh. largely and mostly here in the Midwest.
Okay.
Yeah, like what's the one in Adrian? They're in our league as well.
Would that be Adrian County?
No. Well, no, there's a Catholic university in Adrian as well, whose name I'm now, of course, blanking on.
It's a senior thing. It happens more and more.
Yeah,
you know?
Concordia in Ann Arbor is also in that league.
Okay, now that one I know.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, and so it's like U of M, Dearborn, Madonna, Mary Grove,
okay.
you know, small colleges like that, Aquinas in Grand Rapids. You know,
is in
our league.
Makes sense.
So, yeah. So, I mean, it's a fun level of competition because it's
– They don't take it all that serious.
It's not that so much as
– You know, there's a large number of great students who always wanted to continue playing athletics, playing sports after they're out of high school. And so this gives us the opportunity. We have 24 sports now at Lawrence Tech.
I didn't realize that.
Yep. These have all come back in the last 4 years. And the grade point average of our student athletes is actually higher than our general student population.
No kid.
So, these are talented kids. They're active. They're learning time management and leadership through participation in athletics. So it's a great adjunct to the academic program.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So back to that residence hall. How many students are going to be living there?
It's about 350, and as I say, that brings our total capacity up to slightly over 1,000.
Okay. And there's an interesting story, at least it was interesting to me, to the architectural firm from Northville that's designing the thing was founded by two LTU alumni, and the other two principals that they added later are also LTU alumni, and the project designer on this project is an LTU alumnus as well. So this is going to be a...
Was that a requirement when you put out the bid?
I don't think so.
Well, it certainly didn't help. It didn't hurt.
Okay.
But, you know, 50% of the licensed architects in Michigan are Lawrence Tech graduates. So it isn't that we have to go real far afield to find talented Lawrence Tech alumni who are in the architectural field. And we're delighted that that this firm, Inforum, is going to be... working on this project, and there are so many Lawrence Tech alumni involved in it.
Huh.
All right, and that's Inform, not Inforum, which is the economic club.
But, right.
I didn't
think they were going to be on your football schedule either.
No.
I added an extra syllable.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's all right.
Inform.
Yes, like Inform, right?
And, got it.
And that's the rendering's just. I mean, it looks beautiful. It's going to be a really neat addition to campus. And the where it's being built right now is a parking lot, a vast stretch of asphalt, and it's going to really change the look of the campus, I think.
Yeah, what it's going to do really is meld the academic area of our campus. We have a 107-acre campus in Southfield, and There is an academic quadrangle. There is a housing area. There is a recreational area. And this will kind of link those areas. And so you'll seamlessly go from one to another and have access to the entire campus that way.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to talk about our summer camps a little bit. That's part of our K-12 outreach. We have high school summer camps that are really interesting stuff.
Like a lot of them too, if I recall. Right?
Yeah, essentially we've had our associate provost or assistant provost for enrollment management, Lisa Kiawa, on a couple of times, I think. Mm-hmm. But there's some really neat stuff here. There's like one that's where you do the same things they do at CSI, and there's another one where you're essentially doing microfabrication of microscopic machines, and you can get into this when you're in the ninth grade.
Bruce. Yeah, we have over 20 of these camps, and they're very popular. In fact, several of them have already sold out. Hmm. But you can come for a week, or you can actually live on campus for a week. And the great thing, this allows you to kind of test drive your future college education, because you'll be learning from our full-time faculty. You'll be learning in our labs full of high-tech equipment. So it's a great opportunity. If you're interested in anything from game art to industrial design to sketching to architecture, interior design, a wide variety of possibilities open to high school sophomores, juniors, and seniors. And for more information, they can go to ltu.edu/summercamps.
And I assume there's a cost involved, right?
There is a cost. It's about $750 for a week, a little bit more if you're going to live on campus. But there's also ways to lower that cost. We have scholarships available. And if you sign up for more than one camp, there's also a discount.
Yeah.
All right. We're also adding a couple of new academic programs at Lawrence Tech. Let's talk about those briefly. For instance, there's a new master's program in the College of Architecture and Design.
Yes, it's a master's program in social practice. And really, what it does is it's one of the first in the country, perhaps the first in the area, certainly. And what it does is combine art, design, and urbanism. We're going to be teaching it at our Detroit Center for Design and Technology in Midtown Detroit, and it's going to allow the participants to get very much involved in the community and look at ways that art and design can influence how people are living, how they commute, how they interact with each other. So it's a very exciting program. We also have another new program which will enroll its first students this fall. It's a Bachelor of Science degree in nursing, a BSN. And we're doing this in combination with our good colleagues down the street at St. John Providence Hospital. We can admit 35 students this fall. We'll be admitting them in cohorts going forward. And it allows the students to not only participate in all the great campus life at Lawrence Tech and all the facilities and classes that we have. They'll be able to take clinical work through six St. John Providence centers scattered around this area.
Mm-hmm. And some of this, I kind of view the nursing as an outgrowth of some of our more rapidly growing programs. I know we've recently added programs in biomedical engineering and molecular and cell biology in the College of Arts and Sciences that, people use as a springboard to careers in medical research. And
this
is kind of an outgrowth of that.
Yeah, well, certainly the whole area of medical practice, medical activity is growing as our population ages, as we encounter more types of disabilities and try to solve these types of problems. We're seeing a large increase in biomedical engineering and all the health-related fields.
All right. You've been around Lawrence Tech quite a while now. I don't know if you want to say how long.
Well, his shirt says 1932.
Not
sure if that's a lot.
I've been at Lawrence Tech for over 40 years.
Oh,
wow.
Okay.
So what's the biggest change you've seen in that time, or some of the biggest changes? You might have a top two or three.
Well, huge growth in programs. When I started there, we had about 25 academic programs. Now we have over 100 degree programs, everything from the associate and bachelor's level up through the doctoral programs. The growth of the campus has been phenomenal. Again, when I started, 3 buildings, and now we've got 14 or 15 scattered over 107 acres. So certainly the facility growth, the program growth. I would say, though, that we've always enrolled great students, highly motivated students, students interested in doing well, and that continues.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I really enjoy doing is telling the story of our alumni, and there's never a loss for great stories about our alumni.
No.
We've got – Mike, you'll like this one because you like things that go fast. The lead engineer on the Dodge Demon, the extravagantly powered Dodge Demon, 840 horsepower, if you can believe
that. That's going to be Dave Phillips' next vehicle, I believe.
Yes.
So, right, Dave?
Okay. I know better than to put myself behind that wheel.
A couple of drinks and then – he's a race car driver.
Yeah, okay. But it's going to do a 9.6 quarter mile at 140-some miles an hour. And the lead engineer on it's a 95 Lawrence Tech grad. And I see people like that all the time, you know, now that I'm getting to know the alumni base a little bit.
Uh-huh.
There's just people with really interesting high-tech jobs who
– And the other great thing is we just had commencement last week. We graduated 950 or so students. Almost 90% of them have jobs already here at commencement, by the time of commencement, which is a phenomenal number compared to the national norms, which are between 50 and 60%. So over 90% with jobs in their career fields. And all kinds of independent studies tell us that Lawrence Tech alumni are paid well. They're in generally the top 100 of all colleges and universities in the country in terms of their salaries. And they do very well in the companies that they choose to join up with.
So I guess you guys would recommend that people apply to Lawrence Tech, right?
Well, that would be a terrific idea.
Yeah, I kind of gathered that here.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, what's been interesting for me to watch too, as someone who has been hanging out at Lawrence Tech and moderating panel discussions and stuff like that, is just how much it's changed over the last like 15 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these changes are comparatively recent. I think the whole residential campus thing, it's got a much more sort of traditional college vibe to it than it used to.
Yeah, absolutely. There have been great changes, and they're all for the better. So we're looking for even better things to come, and we're glad that, Matt, you're part of it.
Oh, thank you. All right.
Oh, shameless plug for Matt. So,
all right, folks, that's ltu.edu. We've reached the end of this segment. However, Bruce, thank you for being here today. We'll have you back soon, I hope. For right now, this is Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're listening to the M-Squared TechCast. And we're back with segment 4 today of the M Squared Tech.
So much fun, you know.
Yeah, and what is this episode 80 something?
Two.
No, 82. Okay. All right.
82?
Cool.
83.
All right.
We have the Godfather sitting next to us instead of Jessica today. So.
He'll know.
He'll know.
He knows all.
He knows all.
Yes. No, he doesn't. He just knows where to look.
Oh, okay. It's this new thing called Google,
Yes. Right.
We used to get a lot of calls at the radio station where people would ask us stuff like that, and they would be so impressed we'd give them an answer to something. It's like, all I did was Google it, lady.
That's why, LMGTFY.com
exists. Mm-hmm. It's let me Google that for you.
Yes.
Ah, okay, got it. All right. So without further ado, we have Justin Coffey, the Red Level Microsoft Solutions Manager, who is running a little late. So I know you guys are listening over at Red Level. It's not my fault, but we'll get him in trouble here. So we're going to be talking about how mobile is your workforce, and that's how we start.
Yeah, and it's something that I think it's the reason I'm tardy. It's a mobile world.
It is,
moving
yes.
from place to face.
After all.
Moving from place to place, it's keeping us pretty busy. But it's the reality. People are working, you know, in more spots. We're not just stuck in an office in a cubicle. We move around now.
Absolutely. And so there are obviously advantages and disadvantages to that. The good part is you can work from anywhere at any time. The bad part is you can work from anywhere at any time.
Yep. Frequently, or you can always be working, which is, you know, our case, right? So.
Well, and then there are times when your security goes sideways, like what happened over the weekend. Tell us about this this ransomware outbreak.
Yeah. So we actually started watching the breaking news. I follow a lot of news outlets and all that just to see, you know, when things come. And I started to see my phone pop off notifications about this massive cyber breach that was going on. And we start to look into it, actually posted about it. But it's the WannaCry attack. And I don't know where they come up with the names, so I'll be honest there. But the WannaCry attack, if you haven't heard of it, I don't know where you've been. Maybe you enjoyed the weather over the weekend. But they're now saying that it's hit more than 200,000 hospitals, corporations, government agencies, and other organizations in over 150 countries. Mm. It's a lot. It's the biggest one.
But mostly in Europe and Asia, right? That's
yeah.
what you mentioned in the United States?
Yeah. The irony, though, is that our NSA is the one that created and kind of weaponized the vulnerability, and it impacted the rest of the world. So, you know, we definitely did have some in the U.S., but nowhere near as bad as things like England and Spain and so on. So
yeah, darn near shut the National Health Service down in England, right?
It did. Yeah, they were pretty much said, unless it's life or death, stay at home. You know, I'm sorry, we can't help you. And they had to go back to pen and paper, if we remember what that is. they had access to none of their systems, and pretty much they effectively shut down a lot of the hospitals in England.
So this is how the NSA is funding itself now, through ransomware?
apparently, you know, it's pretty funny. They're actually trying to figure it out. I start to pull up a couple news articles today just to see, now that we're back in the work week, what people are saying. And the government's not sure. They're trying to figure out, was it a state attack, or was it just a hacker that took advantage? And from what we're seeing, the initial report is that, yeah, it was a hacker group out of, I think, the Czech Republic that started it. And, you know, it just kept going. And when we talk about security, you know, this is not let's set this tone, you know, real good. This was avoidable. And I think a lot of people are freaked out and, you know, they haven't read the full story, is that this affected Windows PCs.
All right.
But more than that is Microsoft found out about it when things were leaked. And I think they already knew. They knew about it in March, and they patched it in March,
you had to accept
yes
the patch,
and no.
right? So,
what?
Yes and no.
Yes and no?
They patched it for current operating systems.
That's true. Good point.
Because, as you know, we XP hit end of – and this is where a lot of the issues hit.
Yep.
Is that it, you know, it found, you
for
know,
hospitals
an XP
especially.
System. Exactly. They've got all these embedded systems that they don't update. They don't want to update the OS because it works and it's there and it's doing its thing. That's where a lot of these vulnerabilities really got hit – really
exactly.
got hit hard was, you know, XP machines and Windows 7.
And healthcare is notorious for that.
Yep.
Notorious. And it's going to be interesting, and we can chat about this, is that it's why the call to action around Windows XP to Windows 7 and above was so loud, and we're about to get into that next rhythm. Windows 7 is over 10 years old.
Yeah.
People are already forgetting how old Windows 7 really is.
Mm-hmm.
And we look at Windows 10 and what they're doing, and Windows 10 is a different operating system from Microsoft. It's no longer the, you know, we're going to ship a number and leave it. Windows 10's had major updates. At first, we had the anniversary update. We just had the creators update, I think, 3 weeks ago. And there's a lot of great things in there. It's not, you know, something where it's set it and forget it. So it's exciting to see what Windows 10 can do. And really, you know, for what we're talking about, a mobile workforce, Windows 10 is a cloud-enabled operating system, and it does a lot of cool things from a productivity experience as well as the security experience for people that use it.
Yeah, you look around and you see so many machines still running Windows 7. I know. Yep. I was just thinking, every machine at my house except for my wife's tablet.
Yeah.
Well, and they've now released a patch. They've now released a patch for everything that's out there. I mean, I think going back to XP. At least.
They did. They proactively decided it was the right thing to do. No charge, just because this is it's an unprecedented attack, and ransomware is the worst kind. I mean, it's clearly for financial gain. $300, I think, is where the dollar amount started at, and it went up from there. And one news article is saying that, I think the U.S. government's saying that they're anticipating – Homeland Security, it's one of their spokespeople, I guess, said that less than $70,000 has been paid so far. But I don't know how you're really calculating that, I guess, in bitcoins. But, I mean, it's still a lot of money, you know, when you think about it. But it could be a lot worse. And it's imagining how many companies just said, you know what are we going to do? Or they're still stuck. I think, you know, it just happened Friday and it got worse and worse. It slowed down, but then the machines that are impacted are still there, and the dollar amount goes up and up and up the later you wait. So I think that number is going to skyrocket when organizations like, our backups aren't good. We're stuck. We have to do it. And, you know, the irony is pay it and it actually does fix your problem, but you don't want to give in to a ransom attack.
So probably President Trump's going to launch some cruise missiles at the Czech Republic.
Oh, no.
Right? You think?
So. No, please.
Don't need that.
They might hit one of my favorite breweries over there. Come on.
Yeah, right.
You know, collateral damage.
Yeah. It's going to declare war on the internet.
Hey, speaking of mobile workforce, you guys are having a webinar upcoming. I know I just got an ad for that.
Yeah, we are. And we actually had it scheduled before, but I think it's a lot more relevant now because it just shows how these things can spread. But it's showing that the reality is, and I'm going to pull a stat out, IDC predicts by 2020, mobile workers are going to account for nearly 3/4 of the U.S. workforce. And it's not saying, you know, we're all going to be in our cars moving around, but we're just going to be mobile. Mobile is – it's everywhere. So knowing that the business is going to be generating that change is how do you protect your environment but enable your employees to be productive? And that's really what the webinar is just going to touch on at a pretty high level. We're not going to go super deep. We're going to make it easy for, you know, your business owner to understand and understand how you work in this new modern world. It's moving faster, and we're entering this digital era, and we just need to be prepared and have some knowledge around it.
And the beauty of a webinar is you don't have to drive over to Novi to your headquarters.
Exactly.
You can watch it anywhere.
Exactly. Pull out your cell phone, grab the laptop, you know, wherever you want. You can watch it at your leisure. And if you can't make the live version, register and you'll be able to watch it on demand.
And we should probably tell them when that's going to be.
Yes, it's going to be Wednesday, May 24th at 1 p.m. And if you want to register, you can go to redlevelnetworks.com/mobile-workforce-webinar. Once again, redlevelnetworks.com/mobile-workforce-webinar.
Justin, I just wanted to ask you real quick, what's your personal background? I'm always interested in how people get into this industry.
Yeah, you know, so how it started. It's pretty funny. I was actually a little bit of a, I guess, geek. Is the geek the gamers or were those the nerds? I guess that's the ultimate
Dave,
question.
You're the expert in this.
Who's
area.
Who?
Geeks, nerds, dorks, dweebs. So it depends on it's all about like social anxiety. There's a Venn diagram out there.
I need to get that. I think my office could get a lot of benefit because there's a lot of confusion.
Yeah, I always thought the difference between geek and nerd was the level of social skill. Where nerds might have a little more social skills. Than geeks, I
no,
think.
Other way.
No, other way around.
Okay, gotcha. Our governor, is he a geek or a nerd?
He says he's a geek, but
I thought he ran on One Tough Nerd.
Yeah, nerd.
One Tough Nerd.
Yeah.
No, I started off as a gamer, but then my dad was an entrepreneur here in Metro Detroit, and I remember the take your kid to work day and saw the business going on, and I thought, well, hey, I love technology. I should probably learn how to make a couple dollars doing it when I grow up. And for whatever reason, I loved Microsoft and what they did. I started off with a Mac, ironically, back in first or second grade, and then transitioned to Windows and never looked back. And I was always interested in the cloud. I thought it was very empowering what it did. And when I was 18, I incorporated my own little limited liability corp, became a Microsoft partner, and just started grabbing resources. And then I had a tech background, so I was dual enrolled in high school at Clery University. They had a co-op program, and I learned A+ certification, and I think it was MCSA training for Windows XP and Windows Server 2003 at the
XP,
time or before that. It was the old stuff. Not that old, but for nowadays, it's definitely older. But learning it now. So.
You're killing Mr.
I know,
Phillips.
I know.
the other voice.
Hey, you're feeling a little old now.
Back in my day.
The other voice you're hearing is Dave Phillips, who is the co-founder of Podcast Detroit, but a programmer by training.
Who still has his Windows 3.1.1 installed diskettes somewhere.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, I just saw I saw it on LinkedIn because I clearly follow tech people. They put Windows 3 on a Surface.
I saw that.
It was awesome. Yeah. I was like, wow, that person just showcased you can do a lot of things if you really put your mind to it.
And have enough free time.
I think that was the big one. I'm sure there was a little trial and error there.
So when did you go to Red Level?
I joined 3 years ago just because what Red Level does is pretty, I think, unique. We changed our slogan a little bit ago just, you know, with the times. And what we do is we really help our customers to rethink business and rethink IT. And the webinar that we're hosting, I think, is a testament to that. It's part of our Business to Go series. And it's showing that while IT is important, you know, we can be our geeks and nerds, but ultimately in today's world, it has a real impact and it affects everybody. So when I joined, it was because I have that same kind of philosophy, is that we have to look at IT from a business lens. And if we're able to do that, it's really awesome what we can do for customers. It's really empowering. And we do live in this kind of cloud-first, mobile-first world. And we have to understand what that means. It's not just go to Best Buy, grab a laptop, and you're on your go. There's way more implications. Mm-hmm. And again, the attack over the weekend shows that no one's immune to this. You have to at least spend a little time. You know, we live in a digital world now. It's no longer just lock the door to the office on Friday and you're good. If you've got an internet connection and you're working wherever, you need to know what you can do to proactively defend yourself.
And everybody is carrying one of these.
Exactly.
This is my office. I'm holding my Android phone here. So And iPhones? Well, 2 minutes.
Yeah,
okay,
and the best part is the webinar is not just limited to Windows PCs. We're going to be covering, you know, what we can do to help any organization, whether it's a laptop, whether it's an Apple device, iOS, Android, it doesn't matter, because the reality is we have multiple devices, and the story has to be holistic. We can't just look at it with a Microsoft point of view. So I think that's going to be really helpful, is just how do we approach it? What's a good starting point? And I think it's just a nice getting started introduction to what security means in this mobile world.
Let's hit that one more time so people can sign up for it.
Yeah. So again, it's Wednesday, May 24th at 1 p.m. Eastern. To register, you can go to redlevelnetworks.com/mobile-workforce-webinar.
Wouldn't be a bad thing to sit through and listen to. You might learn something.
Yes.
Oh, actually, and we have prizes.
Oh, you didn't
save the best for last.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, speaking of new toys, we are going to be giving away one of the new Microsoft Surface laptops they just launched, I think, a week ago.
Those are pretty
nice. Yeah, it's going to be an i5, 8 gig.
You can't sign up now because you can't actually.
Yeah, it's going to be an i5, 8 gig with 256 gigs of hard drive space. We're going to be giving away, I believe, $100 Amex gift card. And then we're going to give away a Microsoft Cloud Security Workshop that our team does.
So whoever registers, you just randomly draw? Is that what
you're doing? Gotta attend. We're going to be tracking start to finish.
Must be present to win.
Must be present to win in a virtual environment.
Yep.
You gotta get some of it. So.
Wow. Okay.
A lot of really good prizes. You know, we really think that this is a very important topic. And again, this weekend really showed us that no one's vulnerable from this.
All right. I want to thank all of our guests today. Justin Coffey from Red Level, Microsoft Solutions Manager. Bruce Sinnott, my boss at Lawrence Technological University, the Vice President of Marketing and Public Affairs. Kathleen Norton-Schock from a whole bunch of things, but mostly
can't list them all,
Ardent Cause and Diva Tech Talk. And we kicked off the show with David Cole, the automotive legend, talking about the latest in high-tech automotive. Another fun show, Mike.
Yeah.
Thanks to all of you for listening. And we'll be back again next Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern time.
Yep. But we're going to take Memorial Day off.
Yes, we are going to take Memorial Day off.
Yay.
So, all right.
All right. So this is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Rausch.
And you've been listening to M Squared TechCast, a proud member of the Podcast Detroit Network.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.